this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. We need to remind you of the views that are expressed here, and not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and, well, we had hoped to have Mr. William Rodriguez with us this evening to tell us what happened there on 911. William Rodriguez was the last man to escape from the North Tower on the day that it collapsed, and he had actually been working there in the North Tower. He had an office on the second highest floor of the basement, and he was just working away morning of September 11th, when suddenly there was a massive explosion in the basement of the building beneath him, and the building shook, and he was really sort of almost thrown to one side, thrown off balance, and then, of course, a few seconds later, why the plane hit the upper stories of the building. There was a man in the basement below him named, I believe it was Felipe Lopez, and Felipe, of course, had been badly burned by the blast in the sub-basement, ran into William Rodriguez's office and was then evacuated to the hospital. And, of course, then William helped the firemen evacuate hundreds of people. He had the key to the various floors, so we went up with him and opened the floors and, personally rescued 15 people, helped them evacuate hundreds, and then, of course, he was bringing a man down who was in a wheelchair, and got to the lobby. Was told he had to get out. The building was beginning to tremble, and of course, he raced out. He was the last person to escape from the North Tower on the morning it collapsed. He actually got to himself under a fire truck. Otherwise, of course, he would have been hit by all that debris as it came down. But he did escape, and he was cited as a hero, and he had his picture taken with the president, and citing all the lives it had lost. But then when it began talking about the explosion in the basement, and yes, there was a man in the South Tower who talked about the explosion in the basement of that building, and unfortunately, why, of course, then, of course, everything began to fall apart. What happened was he began getting threatening telephone calls. He couldn't get a job any place. People kept breaking into his apartment and removing the material from his computer, stealing everything off of his computer. And, of course, it was very obvious that he was under harassment. He tried to get a job. And, of course, it would appear that somebody was blacklisting him. He couldn't get a job anyplace. He became destitute and ended up actually sleeping under a bridge for a time there in New York City. He was asked to testify before the 9/11 Commission, which he did, but it was a secret session. He was never allowed to testify in public. No mention was made of his story in the 9/11 Commission report. And, of course, his testimony was sealed in the National Archives for 30 years, classified, because we couldn't let the American people know what really happened on the morning of September 11th, 2001. And, of course, as a result of what happened that morning, we went to war with Afghanistan, and now we're in this terrible war with Iraq, and people have forgotten where it already began. Nobody ever asked the question, why were 1,100 bodies of the people who perished in the Twin Towers never found, no trace of them? You would think that if the buildings had simply collapsed, as we've been told, and they were crushed, why, the bodies would have been there, badly mangled, certainly, but they'd been there, but they weren't there at all. And, of course, the telephones, the computers, they were all destroyed, almost as if there'd been a massive explosion in the building. So the question is, what happened to those bodies? Were they crushed when the building fell? Or were they vaporized when the Twin Towers exploded? But nobody ever wants to ask those questions today. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and it looks like we're not going to be able to have a Mr. Rodriguez with us this evening, so we'll just quickly touch on what happened as far as the going down the Twin Towers that morning and what really happened, and then, of course, we'll open up our lines here at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. There's so many things we can talk about, so we'll ask you to call in if you'd like to talk with us. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. I would simply point out that I don't like to get into a discussion of what happened to the Twin Towers because it's too complicated, other than the fact that there has to be an explanation of what happened to those 1,100 bodies, wouldn't you think? And then how is it possible that the one of the passports was able to survive the flaming inferno there in the North Tower and somehow get out of the pocket of the hijacker? And then out of the wreckage of the plane that was in the North Tower. And then out of the flaming inferno in the North Tower that was so hot it could melt steel or cause it to fail. And that passport would just float to the ground about a block and a half away from the North Tower, where it was found by a passerby and turned in. And of course we know then who one of the hijackers was because we have his passport. Now, what do you think that the possibility that that would have happened spontaneously? Or the same thing happened at the Pennsylvania crash site, where if you look and you see the pictures there, it must have been an awfully hot plane because there's no wreckage there at the crash site, and we're told the plane just nosed down and dove into the ground, and the black box was buried beneath ground. There's a great big pit there, but 25 feet below ground, that's where they found the black boxes. The flames were so hot they just dissolved all the wreckage and everything on board and all the debris, but one of the passports survived there too. Isn't that amazing? And so now we know who a second one of the hijackers was. What do you think the chances, really, honestly, that could have happened? And then, of course, the coming down of Building 7. And if you've seen the pictures of Building 7 come down, why, you know that we have not been told the truth, because that is obviously a controlled demolition. Now, how did the wicked Osama bin Laden manage to get the explosives in the building so he could bring down building number 7 8 hours after the Twin Towers had been struck? Or is it possible that Osama bin Laden did not bring down building number 7, that the explosives had been pre-planted in preparation for what was going to happen that day? And I think if you look at the videos and you can get them on the internet, you'll actually see evidence this was a controlled demolition. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course we don't have a regularly scheduled guest, so we're just going to have open lines here this evening. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. So if you're out there and like to talk about something, why, go ahead. We have nothing really prepared, but we brought a couple of articles just in case there might be a problem tonight. So if you don't call in, I'm going to have to do all the talking. If you'd like to have a question or comment on what we've said, why, give us a call. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But we were simply pointing out the strange things that happened that morning. We pointed out the fact that 1,100 bodies of victims of people who were in the North and the South Tower, they just disappeared. No bone fragments. I mean, a lot of bodies have been recovered. All they have is a few bone fragments. They've identified by DNA, but 1,100 bodies, not even one little tiny piece of bone there to identify. What do you think happened to those bodies? Do you honestly believe if they were crushed, that they would have simply disappeared? And, of course, the computers, the telephones, all the things that were in the building, if they were crushed, they would have been there, but they weren't there. They were all almost as if they were vaporized. And this, of course, is the real problem, is that nobody wants to address these issues. Nobody wants to address why Building 7 came down. Even the 5-year study that was financed by our government, the cover-up, which is, incidentally, all classified. You're not allowed to see any of the material that this government committee that came up with, government finance committee, all the pictures, everything they have, it's all classified because we don't want Osama bin Laden living in the cave to know what we found about why Bill, the Twin Towers came down. But even this five-year evaluation of why the Twin Towers came down can't explain why Building 7 came down at 5:20 in the afternoon. But I pointed out, if you go to Google on the Internet and type in Building 7 videos, and there are a number of them there, you can watch the building come down from many angles, and you'll know that first thing that happens as the roof begins to buckle in the middle, and of course that's what you do with a controlled demolition. You have to remove the central support of the building so it will fall inward. Otherwise, if you don't do that, when you destroy the base, why the building goes outward. Will Building 7, first the center part of the building, the roof, caved in, then the base of the building collapsed, and then, of course, the building came down. It was obviously controlled demolition, and, of course, nobody wants to address that issue. Well, right now we're fortunate to have William Rodriguez with us. How are you doing tonight, William?
Hello. Thank you for inviting me back to your show, and I'm very happy to be here again. Just got back from London. It was an event by itself. I spoke in front of 22,000 people in a venue over there. And the historical event was that it was 22,000 Muslims. I was actually doing a speech about 9/11, and I got a standing ovation by that community. So it was historical by itself, and also because my visit over there coincided with the death of the Russian spy Litvinenko.
Yes.
And the media was having a heyday over there, saying that also that the death was actually a message to any activist that actually will speak against governments or so on. So, you know, my visit there actually took a different turn.
And my understanding is that you actually were squired around Great Britain by a couple of ex-members of the British intelligence, MI5.
That is correct. That is correct.
These are people who have actually spoken out and said that the London bombing was an inside job. And, of course, I think I know one of them was in Alex Jones' video, Terrorstorm, where he is a member of a former intelligence agent over there, worked for the British government, and, of course, the London bombing was obviously an inside job. The explosion wasn't inside the trains. It came from beneath the trains. But nobody ever wants to mention that. And then, of course, it is time to actually go off. There was a military exercise just spontaneously, just at that same location as this explosion in the trains and on the bus there in London. And it was timed perfectly so that Tony Blair would get reelected. It happened just, about 5 or 6 days before the election. And, of course, everybody in England was terrified, so they tended to vote for Tony Blair.
Correct.
And but anyway, of course, fortunately, you were protected and you got back safely, and we're so glad that you did. Because
thank you.
William has one of the most important stories to tell, and I think most of the members of my listening audience have not heard your story, so I'm going to ask you just to go ahead and tell the story yourself.
Well, I worked in the building for 20 years. I was the person in charge of all the stairwell of the North Tower of the World Trade Center. I was a janitor. And at the same time, I was the person that on 9/11 had the only available master key that opened all the doors in the building. And with that master key, I helped evacuate hundreds and hundreds of lives to be able to save them on that tragic day. I worked there, like I said, for 20 years. I lost 200 friends, personal friends, on that event. And I became an activist after that catastrophe.
No, why don't you tell what happened, though, that morning?
Yes. I went into work at 8:30 in the morning. My regular work hours was at 8 o'clock in the morning. That day, by a miracle, I actually was there late. And I say it's a miracle because I would have been at the top of the building, because I started cleaning the stairwells from the top of the building all the way down. While I was on the basement, I came in because the office support for the company that I worked for, American Building Maintenance, was located on the sub-level 1. For those people that didn't know how the building was actually built, it has 6 sub-levels of basements, basement number 1 all the way down to basement number 6. While I was there, talking to the supervisor, and there were some people in the office, we heard a huge explosion. I mean, a huge explosion that pushed me upwards. And obviously came from below my feet because I was pushed upwards. And the first thing I thought it was one of the generators that just blew up from the mechanical room that was actually below us. That's where they have all the pumps, all the machines that, you know, supply energy to the building and all other types of machinery. And so when I went to verbalize it, you know, some 6 seconds after, we heard a boom all the way on the top of the building, two different separate events that actually goes against the official story of the government that it was the planes. But, you know, our experience was that there was an initial explosion on the basement, on the sub-levels. When I went to, like I said, to verbalize it, we heard that impact all the way on the top. And then almost a couple of seconds after, we hear, you know, a guy running into the office in a shock state with missing pieces of his face, and his skin was pulled all the way from the armpits all the way to the top of the fingertips. And this guy was a black guy from Honduras named Felipe David, who I did not know, and he works for a company called Aramark. It was a company that actually supplied the vending machines with all the soda and candies, and he was located on the B2 level in the closet where they have all the supplies. He was filling up his supply cart when this explosion happened on the basement, and he put his hands to cover his face from the fire, and that's why his skin was pulled out. So, you know, I said, don't move, because I was going to pick up the phone and call the EMS, the emergency medical unit that was located on the south tower, and they were very, very effective always to come and help people. So I went over there to pick up the phone while everybody's screaming and seeing this guy like that. And when I went to pick up the phone, we hear another explosion, and, you know, the walls cracked, the false ceiling fell on top of us, the sprinkler system got activated, the floor was moving below us again. Everybody thought it was an earthquake, so they were just jamming the door frames thinking that it was an earthquake. And then, you know, I realized, because I survived the bomb of 1993, I figured that it was something else, and I said, you know, it's not an earthquake, let's get out of here. And I started pushing everybody out of the office to take them outside what they call the loading dock. I put Mr. Felipe David on my shoulder, and I helped him come out of the building through a huge hill that gave entrance to the parking lot to the World Trade Center, and actually faced West Street in New York. Vesey Street in New York. And once I get there with all these people, 14 people in general, I see an ambulance running towards us. I stop the ambulance. I put Mr. Felipe David in there, and he goes into a coma. He just, you know, gets totally knocked out. And that's from the first time that I hear from a security guard that was standing right next to me, a plane hit the building. I turn around and I look up and I saw the hole, I saw the fire, I saw the smoke, I saw, you know, pieces of debris falling down. So when I look up, the visual effect, because I was standing right at the base of the foundation of the building, is that I couldn't see the antenna all the way on the top because the smoke was very dense. So I said, you know, we got to go back. I started screaming because I wanted to help the people from Windows of the World. And Windows of the World was the restaurant that was located on the 107th floor of the North Tower. And my interest was always, because my friends were there as well. Remember, I used to start cleaning the stairwells all the way from the top down. And I had breakfast every morning with these people up there. So, of course, I was desperate to get some help for these people. So nobody wanted to go with me. Even my supervisor that I just pushed out of the building started screaming at me, Rodriguez, you're staying here, you're not going back in there. And, you know, I got pretty upset. I said, no, these are the people. The elevator operators belong to our company. We have to go and help them. There was a guy called Willie Peterson, that I wanted to help, but, you know, these people didn't want to go in.
All right, fine. We're going to be back here in just a moment as well. Then, of course, we'll develop the ideas of what happened after that. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is William Rodriguez. And so, William, you actually went back into the end of the building, and you actually helped the firefighters evacuate really hundreds of people, didn't you?
Correct. I went floor by floor opening the doors with the master key. I have one of the five available master key in the whole complex, and I went opening the doors on the stairwell so people could escape.
In other words, they couldn't get through those doors. They were locked.
From the stairwell itself, they were locked. The World Trade Center was a Class A building, which means that three doors will not open through the stairwells, and one will open all the way consecutively to the top. Three won't open, one will open all the way to the top. So that's why that key was so crucial. And at the same time, if we recall the 1993 bombing, a lot of time was lost by the firemen trying to break through the doors during that time to evacuate people.
Why do they keep those doors locked? I mean, you would think that
Very simple. It's a Class A building, and on the building codification, any skyscraper over 50 floors and above need to have a way to contain a fire. Otherwise, the skyscraper could be swallowed in a ball of fire very easily through the stairwells. So they needed to have that, and that's a standard building codification here.
Then how are the people supposed to get out of the building, though?
Through the floor itself, you can get out. The problem was that with the smoke and the density of the smoke, people didn't even know, and it happened constantly, where the exits were.
All right, so anyway, you get hundreds and hundreds of people out, and then there's some gentleman there who's, in a wheelchair you're trying to get out?
Yeah, there was a man in a wheelchair on the 27th floor named Ed Begay, who was having kind of an asthma attack, and he was taken out of the wheelchair. He was placed in a rescue basket, one of those orange baskets that they used to get people out, and all tied up. I was told by the police officer that was with me, named David Lim, to help this guy escape. And, I wanted to continue because this was when I was on the 39th floor and the South Tower was already hit by the other plane. So I wanted to continue going up, but this guy wanted me to get out. I'm talking about the police officer. And the only way he got me to react was getting some help for the man on the wheelchair. And as I started going down the stairwell, the South Tower collapses, and when it collapses, we have like a scene from the Tower Inferno, the movie, where you see parts, falling all over us, sheetrock breaking apart, the fluorescent lights on the stairwells because of the shifting of the building, breaking in line. It was, total mayhem, and up to the moment that I get to the lobby, and one of the firemen tells me, to get the ambulance ready. So when I started going towards the front of the building, of course, everything was a disaster. I mean, everything was totally destroyed. The building started to shake. I get to the front, and the police is across the street on the West Side Avenue on the area of the World Financial Center screaming at me not to look back. So, I looked back, and I saw all the body parts of the people that jumped out of the building. And it was horrible. It was one of the most dantesque and apocalyptic views that I have ever seen in my life.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course William had actually helped get hundreds of people out of the building by opening the doors so they could get down or run down the stairs. But the doors were locked and they couldn't get through them. So then, of course, he wants to keep going up. A police officer convinces him he has to help this man in a wheelchair get down. They get the man down to the lobby, and then, of course, the building really begins to shake, and so he's ordered just to leave the building. He starts to run. The people said, don't look back. And, of course, he does look back, and he sees all the body parts there, the people who jumped out of the building, a pretty grotesque picture, and then he dives under a fire truck, and then what happens, William?
I'm sorry?
You go right ahead. You actually got to the fire. There's a fire truck just sitting there.
Yes. The building started to shake the moment that they said, don't look back. And all of a sudden, I hear run, 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 and everybody running across the street. And I said, this is going to kill me. I don't know where to run. And I saw a fire truck parked right in front of the revolving doors. So I just slid right under the fire truck, and the building started to collapse right on top of it. And at that moment, the only thing I said, just please, God, don't let my mother see my body in parts. Let her recognize my body. And it was just like, you know, I was giving myself to death at that moment because I really expected to die. And there was kind of a huge silence after the huge collapse, which was very, very loud. And then all this dust came from all over. And then you couldn't breathe because, you know, it just... There was no way to get oxygen. But I, you know, put my face right under the t-shirt that I had and just try to relax as much as I could. You see, I was a magician for 30 years. 30 years I used to do escape acts and stuff like that. And one of the things that they always taught you is that you have to control your emotions and you have to bring down your breathing when you're in trouble, and that's exactly what I did, but I was expecting to die. The good thing is that from across the street, where CNN and Global Vision from Brazil were standing, they pinpointed the area where they saw the last person coming out of the building, meaning me. And they said, you know, that's the last area. That's the last person came out in that area. And that's how they started looking for the rescue effort.
Did they have to dig you out? How much?
They have to dig me out, yes.
Okay, so actually, how much debris was there on top of the fire truck?
Oh, well, the pictures are on the internet, and they can see the actual destruction when I was pulled out. They just have to do a search.
All right, Kirsten. Of course, you were so fortunate. Did you hear anything at all, that anything else that suggested explosion other than, was there more than one explosion in the basement?
It was more than one explosion.
So there were actually several explosions in the basement then. Of course, that is the one thing, of course, that they do not want the American people to know. So basically, then you were lauded as a hero, and you had your picture taken with President Bush. So then what happened? Then, of course, you wanted to, I suppose you wanted to get another job. Why couldn't you find another job?
I became the image of 9/11 for the community. I became an activist because I started organizing the victims. I created one of the fire's family groups called the Hispanic Victims Group because I saw there was a need and these people were not getting any help. Then I became so involved in trying to get these organizations, the non-for-profit organizations that were actually taking money from all over the world to help the victims, to actually disburse these funds so people will get help, and because it wasn't happening. And I'm talking about like the major non-for-profits, and it was always a battle. And at that time, I wasn't concentrating on my needs, in the sense that I have money saved. I have $68,000 for a house that I saved for over 10 years to buy a house with a huge down payment. And I was using that just to keep me going around and doing the activism, thinking that, you know, eventually this, because I was told that, you know, any expenses was going to be paid back by this organization, which was a big lie, of course. And, you know, I was tapped by the two sides of the government to run for office. I train as they have something called the Governing Institute, where you train on everything about politics. And I took everything, thinking that, you know, yes, I was going to run to help my community better. But then I started asking questions about what really happened, and that's when I noticed that everybody started going back the other way. They didn't want to face me. They didn't want to answer me. And they even told me, you know, don't mess around because there's an investigation, a formal investigation that is going on. And it was all a lie.
Didn't you get some threatening telephone calls?
Oh, yes, constantly.
You got threatening telephone calls because you were questioning what happened that morning, and then didn't they break into your home?
Twice.
All right, and what else? Was there anything else that happened other than you just, when you went out to get a job, you couldn't get one?
Yes, well, you know, they closed all the doors, and I became unemployable by
Hold that thought, we'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this evening is William Rodriguez. And, of course, William was initially he was a hero. He had actually saved so many lives. And he was trying to get, of course, the funds dispersed to help the people. So many of them, you know, were really impoverished. And so many lives were shattered. Initially, there wasn't any help for the people. And then, of course, but when he began talking about what he knew about the explosion in the basement of the building, why would there have been an explosion in the basement of the building? And that was a question you were not supposed to ask. Was that pretty well the case? Nobody wanted to question the official government story?
They didn't want to listen to many of the people that were there. The 9/11 Commission was created to investigate the events. And after that happened, we made available so many witnesses that were never called because I don't know what happened. They just didn't want to check every angle. And up to that moment, we were actually having problems with the 9/11 Commission because they didn't want to have a family member to represent us. They didn't want to answer the questions directly that the families were posting to the commission. So we realized that, you know, something was wrong.
What about the initial investigation, the Joint Select Commission, the Joint Intelligence Committees? Were you involved with that at all?
Because of course. Well, the 9/11 Commission exists because six family members went to Congress, and I was one of them, to ask for the commission to be created.
But before that, there was initial investigation. There was the Joint Select. It was headed by Peter Goss.
But you see, that's an internal thing that really didn't make any sense for us because we didn't have access and still don't have access to any information that these people actually put out. So it was just a little makeup that was a preamble of what the 9/11 Commission was going to finalize, which was a whitewash. And we still believe that the 9/11 Commission was just a whitewash.
I'm absolutely convinced, having read all of the Staff Commission reports and having read, of course, the book written by Thomas Keene and Lee Hamilton called Without Precedent. If you want to read something really very, very clever and very, very subtle, I suggest you get it and read it, and you will find that all they do is attack anybody who suggests there is a conspiracy. And, of course, they leave out so many of the important issues, like the military exercises that were held that morning that simulated a plane being hijacked. And, of course, that's one reason why there was no military response, because they were actually confused. At one time, it appeared that there were 29 different planes hijacked. Nobody knew where they were, what was going on, and many people even felt that Flight 11 continued flying after it crashed into the North Tower. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we were just simply talking about the planned confusion that occurred that morning because somebody within the military was holding exercises that simulated a hijacking, and then you had a real hijacking, and what are the chances that could have happened just by accident? Well, William, one of the things that people keep talking about is the fact that when they began to excavate the basement of the World Trade Centers, I suppose on both sides, both the North and the South Tower, they found evidence of molten metal. Now, I know you weren't there, but what have you heard about that?
Well, yeah, they found molten metal there. Some of the actual responders that were in the area came out with the allegations, and the evidence, and these are all definitely has spurred the whole scientific investigation by other sources besides the NIST, which is the National Institute of Safety and Technology, that came out and embraced the official version. But the scientists out there, they claim that it was highly explosives planted in there that probably caused this to happen. And again, I am not an expert on explosives. I am not an expert on weapons or anything like that. I was just a janitor, and just, you know, my experience either validates or destroys some of the government's official stories. So, you know, I let the experts come out and speculate on whatever their background and their credentials are, but I have no credentials whatsoever.
All right, well, then you were asked to testify. Did you ask to testify, or did the commission ask you to testify? In other words, did you...
I asked first. I said, they're calling all these high-level government officials, and they are not listening from the people that were there. So I asked them, you know, you need to talk to all the people that we have available, meaning not only me, but all the witnesses that I have. And I got to the point that they called me with the, you know, to interrogate me, but behind closed doors, they didn't want to have it on an open hearing like everybody else.
And that was basically what they did. I think our listeners have to understand they took testimony from 1,200 people. And perhaps maybe 100 of them they talked about in the report. The other 1,100, they sealed for 30 years. Now, why would, if there's nothing to conceal, why would they classify that and seal those records in the National Archives for 30 years? And obviously, they were not trying to keep the American people from knowing about William's story and similar stories. There were people in the South Tower who heard an explosion in the basement of that building. So, but you see, the American people are never allowed to hear this sort of thing. And, you know, if they never hear it, they have no idea what really happened. And because of the media control, why, of course, the average individual has never heard your story, which is why I wanted our listeners tonight to hear about the explosion that occurred in the building of the north basement of the North Tower before the plane struck high up in the building.
Yeah, and also, well, you know, I just don't want to plug anything, but, you know, I have a website called 911, the numbers, keymaster.com, where I actually have videos available to substantiate the story, and actually this is how we raise funds to spread the truth all over the world. A lot of people have not heard from me over here, but it's funny that all over it, Europe and Asia and all these countries, I am able to reach over 500 million people with these stories constantly. And here in the United States, it's just such a blackout with when it comes to the truth. So we find that, you know, there is a double standard. And it's sad, you know, it's funny too, because I am the expert for several of the Latino national networks, and they will cover everything related to 911 from me as an expert. But when it comes to the experiences of that day, the major American networks will not touch it. They will not touch it. They will touch everything, you know, about the victims, about the problems 5 years after the distribution of the funds and things like that. But when it comes to the event itself, they don't touch it.
Well, of course, I think there is a great deal of information they do not want the American people to know, because think of the implications. If we've been lied to about what happened on 9-1-1 and who is really responsible, then our whole war with the Muslim world, the battle in Afghanistan, the war in Iraq, and all the people, both our side and the other side, who have died, it's all been contrived. And why, of course, this would be one of the greatest crimes of all history. They can't possibly let the truth be out and let the American people begin to question the official party line. Now, certainly, as far as your testimony before the 911 Commission, who was actually there when you testified?
They have a team of investigators that actually have the whole session recorded, and these are the people that did the behind-the-closed-doors investigations, and they supplied this to the congressmen that were involved directly. But they did this at their office here at the Federal Building in New York. And like I said, it was all behind closed doors. And they were very amazed with my story. I tell you that. They were even angry. And which I personally believe the investigators at that time and part of the 9/11 Commission to do this kind of work were honest people. I'm not, you know, blaming them for not coming out with this information. These are people that are career investigators that actually gave these reports to the top.
The man who headed, the executive director of the National Commission, was a man named Philip Zelikow, who is a personal friend of Condoleezza Rice. He'd even written a book with Condoleezza Rice. He was part of this whole ruling elite that controls our country, part of the Council on Foreign Relations. He was placed there not to reveal what happened, but to conceal what happened. And so this is why none of the important information came out in the 911 Commission report. Of course, the president initially had wanted Henry Kissinger to head the commission.
Well, it was a problem. When they say that they wanted Henry Kissinger, we went crazy. We didn't want Henry Kissinger at all, because this guy is considered a war criminal in many countries. So you know, and the family members wanted to have a total disclosure of his client list. And he went crazy when he was asked by the family members to disclose that. And he said, well, I don't understand what these have to do with the investigation. He said, well, we don't want any bias when it comes to the investigation. And he just, you know, following day, he just excused himself from being the head of the commission.
Well, because then the Bush administration chose Thomas Keene, who was a former governor, and he's certainly part of the establishment as well. His job was to cover up the truth, and he and Philip Zelikow and Lee Hamilton did a great job of snowing the American people. Well, anyway, Chris, when you were testifying before this group of investigators, did they ask you any pointed questions? Did you have a feeling they were really trying?
Oh, no, they did ask everything. No, they did. They were very thorough. And like I said, Damontief, these people, I really believe the investigator itself, they were career investigators. They were doing the whole thing honestly. It's just when it gets to the top, who takes this information and, you know, put it in an envelope and say this won't be open or this won't be investigated or this won't be checked out. You know, this is the people that we have to worry about. They have very able investigators to do a really thorough job, and I believe that, you know, somebody all the way on the top, you know, decided to do the orchestrating.
Well, I know I've read every word of the staff committee report, and there's not one mention of you in that. I have it all.
It doesn't appear.
And so, they see, they could not let the American people know the truth. So, after, because the 911 commission report comes out, and they assure us, oh, yes, there's certainly NORAD that was confused that morning, the FAA was confused, and the military may have lied a little bit about what happened, but we're not going to do anything about it. We're not here to try to find out who is guilty. We just tried to find out what happened. And they didn't try to find out what happened. The implications.
Yeah, it's funny because when they say we don't want to find, it just didn't make sense that it was a wrong message. Actually, we wanted to find out who was guilty. We wanted to find out who was behind it. We wanted to find out where were all the failures. And honestly, you know, everybody on that 9/11 Commission report have received job promotions. They have been promoted, all those people. And, you know, where in the world you're going to promote people for the biggest disaster that ever happened? Only here. And, of course, it was very offending for the families, very offending for the people that were there. And, honestly, we thought it was a bad outreach from the government towards the families.
Well, I think, of course, the government, at least the people at the who really run the government from behind the scenes, the last thing in the world they wanted was for the American people to question the official government conspiracy line, because it is a conspiracy. The government claims that there were 19 hijackers who conspired to actually hijack four planes and crash two of them in the Twin Towers, one in the Pentagon, and of course, one, of course, in the White House, I assume, but that was the one that, of course, somehow or other dived into the ground in Pennsylvania. And a crash there, but of course there's hardly any evidence of a crash site there. The material is strewn over an 8-mile period. How could that be if the plane crashed in the ground? And how could, of course, one of the engines from Flight 93 have bounced, you know, a quarter of a half a mile away from where the plane crashed? This doesn't make sense.
You're right. It doesn't make sense, and that's one of the things that the families have fought so hard for the last 5 years. And one thing that you mentioned before, that they actually wanted to seal all of this for 50 years. Even in New York, Mayor Bloomberg have asked the recordings from the first responders and the firemen on that day to be sealed for the same amount of time. And it has been because the families, and he said at that time that it was because he didn't want the families to have the grief to listen to that. And it has been the families from the very beginning who have asked that this be made available to the world, because we wanted to understand and find out exactly what happened on that day. And the recent lawsuit from the New York Times and the family members that brought out the recordings, the 28 recordings, CD recordings of the first responders was because of the family's involvement. So, you know, these people are taking decisions upon their respect to the families, and it has been us who have been very, very militant from the very beginning to get this information out.
Well, are the families beginning to lose hope of ever getting the truth out, or are they still hanging in there, the Jersey girls? And the, I know that certainly the orphans...
Well, they're all hanging in there. They are trying to do their activism. There's so many issues that we are dealing with. This is not the only one. Remember, we are dealing with the issues of the human remains that they still haven't identified. We have to deal with the whole Ground Zero rebuilding and the new memorial. We are dealing with the problems of the human remains that were put on a city dump, and we want them to be brought back in the area. The problem with the investigation of the debris, whatever happened to the debris, the people dying constantly because of Ground Zero syndrome. There's so many ill effects that have been developed by the first responders that were there cleaning up the area. That's another major cover-up from the government, and it's been, it's been highly documented on all over the nation, and by the internet you can get all this information, where the government knew that it was the highest level of contamination ever recorded in history. Here, hazmat. And they allowed this to go on because they wanted to reopen Wall Street. So, you know, it's a very criminal act, and by so, we find ourselves in the middle of one issue after the other, and there's never been a resting point for all the victims and survivors of that event. 5 years after, we still don't know the truth. 5 years after, we're still hurting. 5 years after, we're still fighting to get help, because some of that help that were promised from the very beginning never arrived to us.
Well, of course, now there were over 1,100 bodies, I understand. Over 1,100 bodies. They never even found a bone fragment from. These just disappeared like they were vaporized. How could that have happened if the building had simply pancaked on itself?
Not only that, when you have, for example, they found human remains a month and a half ago, and in an area just 12 feet away from Ground Zero, inside a manhole, and we wanted the whole thing to be stopped so they could research the area. They stopped it for 3 days only, and the answer from the mayor's office was that 6 months ago, when they found body parts, human remains on top of the bush bank that was across the street, Ground Zero, they said that it would never happen again. And then, you know, a month and a half, we get the same results all over again. And what they said was that they were going to do a thorough investigation in the area on a big radius of the affected area, which it never happened. And the answer from the city was to send 17 trucks full of cement and patch up the whole Ground Zero. So, you know, we call that, you know, covering the evidence.
You mentioned that this Deutsche Bank. Now, was the Deutsche Bank badly damaged at the time of the Twin Towers collapse?
Well, yes, it was, because it was right in the middle. It was a huge gap right in the middle, and but it was highly contaminated. That's the contamination level.
Is it the contamination? Is that the reason you're going to pull it down, or is there any structural problem?
Is it the contamination?
Surely the contamination. In other words, this very, very toxic dust. Then the next question comes up. Where did all the toxic dust come from? And certainly, cement isn't toxic.
Exactly.
And certainly, if you crush a computer, it wouldn't be toxic. The other way it would be toxic is if it were to have been vaporized.
Yes. And, for example, I did an interview 2.5 months ago with one of the top experts in the nation, a former lieutenant colonel for the Army in charge of the whole depleted uranium program for the military. His unit is the first one to be called in a national disaster to do the hazmat containment. And he said when he saw what happened, he knew it was going to be the biggest contamination ever recorded. And he called the EPA to activate his unit, and he was totally ignored. His name is Dr. Doc Rocky. And I have him on camera saying that. So, you know, we have a criminal act on that level alone. And he explained, for example, when you have high levels of radiation, where does that radiation come from? You know, they say the plane has a depleted uranium part, for example. The byproducts, the chemical byproducts that were mixed after the explosion, the jet fuel, the asbestos, the phosphorus from all the television screen blowing up at the same time, the fluorescent light with the selenium from the fire detectors, so many things, you know, put together, you know, is just the worst disaster in terms of the environment.
Let's get your website up one more time, and it's
911keymaster.com. 911, the numbers, keymaster.com.
And is there do you have a lot of videos listed there to get?
I only have one video, and but you can see actually videos from my presentations on TV.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yes.
All right, fine. Well, you go right ahead. You were just saying that they can get, see videos of your presentations.
Yes, they go to 911keymaster.com. That's my personal website. They can order the video of my experience of the actual conference that I did in Los Angeles before this year. And the other videos that they can actually see on the website is, for example, my encounter for TV with Felipe David, the guy from Honduras that I spoke about from the very beginning. This is the guy that was totally burnt from an explosion in the basement. And you can see him directly on TV there, you know, from a video clip that, you know, this person survived. He's alive, and he was one of the persons that was never called by the 9/11 Commission. You have the encounter with police officer David Lim, for example, that is the Port Authority police officer that was with me on the rescue effort. And he talks about, you know, sorry, they're in Spanish, those two videos, but, you know, you can understand what the guy is actually talking about, that all the experience that I went through that day is exactly what I'm telling you right now. And, you know, it's a good thing. On that website, you can actually get updated of all my outreach all over the world to get the truth out, and the people that we are meeting and the people that we are bringing this information to. So, you know, it's kind of a support website. And actually, you know, remember, I don't get any salary. I don't get any support by any organization. I do this through donations, and they can do it through that website. And they can order the DVD and help as well.
And, of course, I think it's well worthwhile doing it. It's important that William Rodriguez stays out there on the front lines and tells his story and keeps drawing attention to the fact that his testimony was so important that the government actually sealed that, and it's classified and nobody can see it for, is it 30 or 50 years?
Correct.
Is it 30 or 50?
50
years. So they sealed it for 50 years. Now, why would they want to seal the testimony for 50 years? Is it they're afraid that Osama bin Laden is going to find out what was said at the 9/11 Commission? Or is it possible, is it just possible, they are afraid that the American people will learn the truth about what happened that Tuesday morning? Well, anyway, we're going to be back here in just a moment, and when we get back, why, our telephone lines will be open, and you can give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 if you have a question for William Rodriguez, because he was there, he experienced what's happened, and he's been on the front lines of the battle since that time. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do hope many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's the mainstay of how we're able to be on almost 60 different types of outlets. That's shortwave, internet, satellite, and then, of course, the radio stations we're on every single week. Many of them just one time a week for half an hour, many of them on a daily basis. But believe me, it's an expensive proposition, but it's so vitally important. If we have not been told the truth about what happened on September 11th, I believe we're going to be drawn into a major war with the Islamic world, and unless the American people speak out now, before long it'll be too late. Because, of course, we have, we're a bankrupt nation. We're bankrupt financially, and if you know what the real deficit is, next year it's supposed to be $241 billion. It's really 4.2 or a trillion. It's about a thousand times what they're telling him. And they're talking about, you know, 200, well, I suppose not a thousand times, but about 10, about 20 times what they're talking. They're talking about $241 billion. It's actually $4.2 trillion. They're simply lying. That takes into account all the money they're stealing. They don't put the cost of the war in. They don't put the cost of all the earmarks that they put on the military budget. And then they don't put on all the responsibility we're going to have. You know, almost a quarter of the population is going to be retiring in the next 25 years or so. And they have to provide Social Security and Medicare for them, and all the government employees are going to retire, and there's no money to pay them. But that is the truth of the matter. And so you have to understand we're not only fiscally bankrupt, financially bankrupt, but we're morally bankrupt too. And the only way we're ever going to be able to restore this country is if the American people really understand and really care about what happened that Tuesday morning. Well, certainly if you'd like to get in touch with us, our number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, if you'd like to perhaps get some of our newsletters, why, we'd be glad to send you one of our more recent newsletters. If you have access to the Internet, let me suggest you that you get our newsletters starting with August of 2006, August, September, October, November. And, of course, December will conclude the fifth part of the Truth About 911 series. That's the Truth About 911, but you can get this off the Internet at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. And if you don't have access, we'd be glad to send you a sample copy of one of our letters and one of our catalogs. If you're interested in health products, why, we'd be glad to send you a catalog. If you're interested in, and you should be interested in, beginning to put aside emergency food because I think we're moving into some very, very difficult times, and we can talk about that some other evening, but I believe not only are the people who are in control planning on creating a crisis to justify the implementation of the powers that were given to the president to declare a military dictatorship, powers that he assigned into law. It's called the John Warner Defense Authorization Act. That's the John Warner Defense Authorization Act, where, of course, even Liberal Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont has said this actually encourages the president to declare a national emergency and martial law in America. Why would they want to get legislation like that? Well, legislation that allows them to use American troops against the American population and does away with the Posse Comitatus law. Why would they want to take control of the National Guard away from the governors so the president can forcibly take the National Guard and use those against the American people? What do they know that the rest of the people don't know? If you'd like to get our material on concentration camps in America, we have, of course, video America Behind Barbed Wire. We have a concentration camp special. We have a four-tape set. You need to get this information. If you want information on the Military Commission Act, we're putting together a four-tape set. It'll be available very, very soon. Understand that God does move against nations, and God does bring punishment on nations that have turned against him. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. And our guest this evening for the second hour will be William Rodriguez, who was our guest for the first hour. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. That's 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. And we'll be glad to take your calls here. If you have any questions or comments, certainly Mr. Rodriguez knows what's happened. He was there. He witnessed the terrible things that happened, and certainly he's been on the front lines ever since then, trying to break the truth out. Well, let's go to Mike, who's calling from Santa Cruz, and again, our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Yeah, hi, Stan. I wanted to ask Mr. Rodriguez if he could elaborate any further on the radiation that he was talking about a little while ago. And the reason I wanted to ask is because there's been some information coming out about radiation detected in the area. And such a thing as a small demolition-style nuke explains a lot of things, like the vaporization of 1,100 bodies and so many... the pulverization of everything, the fine dust, there's so much insanity that happened that day that really hasn't been explained, but such a thing as a low-yield, demolition-style nuke explains a few things like that.
But of course, Mike, is there any evidence that there is any increased radiation? There would have to be increased radiation with that.
Well, there seems to be.
Well, let's get to Mr. Rodriguez, because he certainly knows a lot more about it than anybody else.
There was a radiation in the area. Like I said before, I spoke to one of the top national experts on depleted uranium, and he identified depleted uranium to be part of the whole thing. And depleted uranium is what is used on what they call armor piercing ammunition. By the military. I am not an expert. I just spoke to the experts, and these are people within the government itself. This is a lieutenant colonel. And they did have not only the highest levels of carcinogens, but the highest levels of asbestosis. And yes, there was radiation in the area. The EPA has refused to give us the data, what they call the radioactive data. And as you may have known already, we sued the EPA, the families and survivors, and that's how we were able to get the internal memos from the EPA, where it says that they knew that this was a highly contaminated area, and they, you know, totally misguidedly let the people continue in the area doing this rescue effort. But just think about two pictures, the pictures from the cleanup at the Pentagon. You saw everybody on protective gear, everybody with those huge masks, white suits all the way to the top of the heads, the gloves. And then look at the pictures from Ground Zero, and you see the first responders on T-shirts going through all this rubble, getting exposed to these levels that right now, you know, even at this day, 5 years after, they don't recognize Ground Zero syndrome at all. And you have 23 people that have died directly because of this exposure. The last one was 2 weeks ago and didn't even receive media attention because of his death. And we did a health forum 3 weeks ago, and it was a sad sight when you have close to 20 of the first responders sitting in front of these symposium, all wearing one of those plastic tubes on their nose with a gas tank, oxygen tank right next to them. All these people didn't know each other, and they're having the same effects. So, you know, they did have radiation in the area.
In fact, the interesting thing is that apparently over 400 people who were there, of the something like 8,000 people were involved in the cleanup, over 400 of them actually have cancer of one sort or another today. And that, of course, is according to the lawyers handling these claims. Obviously, something is there that's really predisposing the people to cancer. We'll be back here in just a moment to continue this discussion. Well, Mike, did you have anything else you wanted to say?
Well, as I understand it, there was a FEMA crew that went in for cleanup, and they went in with radiation suits.
All right. So here's
that is correct. And again, there you see it. You have just a crew doing that, and then what about the other crews? They were actually exposed. They only have what they call a decontamination area. And you know what the decontamination was? A guy with a water hose putting water on the cars coming and leaving the ground zero area. And the expert said that was the worst thing you could have done, because what you're doing is actually kicking up the contaminants and the pollutants into these people. And the other thing that we don't take in consideration is that, you know, like you said, many people have cancer and so on. But these people, when they left the area, they went home with that dust. And when they went home, they have sex with their wives and their girlfriends, and they got them contaminated as well. 5 years after, that's already in their system. There's called something called micro dispersion all over your system, and because you were not tested from the very beginning, now it's very difficult to indicate what is going to be the exact death that you were going to be having, because right now we have a death sentence. But we don't know what is going to be killing us, because we could be dead because of different reasons directly affected because of ground zero. For example, if I clean in an area that have, for example, more levels of phosphorus radiation, for example, and when I say that, just imagine tens of thousands of television monitors blowing up, and you know that phosphorus gas mixed up with whatever other byproducts were in the area go to that system. Then you have people on the other side of the cleanup area that probably were exposed to all the kind of different byproducts. They were going to die. They were going to die or something different. And because we didn't get tested from the very beginning, that's already dispersed in your body. So you're going to have different kinds of cancers and different kinds of asthma, sarcoma in your skin. That, you know, is an epidemic right now. And there's close to 60,000 people on the workers' compensation board claiming for medical tests, and they don't get them because the workers' compensation board do not recognize ground zero syndrome. It's not recognizable. And you know what's going to be? The problem here is that if they recognize it, the city, the state, and the federal government will become liable. It's a problem of liability. If you say, yes, this is what's happening, you know, the mass amount of people that have to be compensated is all about money, about dollars and cents. That's all it is.
All right, fine. Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and do you have anything else you wanted to say before we let you go, Mike?
Well, all these people got sick while they were on Larry Silverstein's property. And, well, he's the one with all the money now.
All right, fine, but he's not going to be held responsible. He has a lot of friends. He has very good friends within the legal system. I'm sure he'll be protected. You don't have to worry about Larry. He'll do all right.
Right. I just want to point out, like Mr. Rodriguez was saying, that the timing of these cancers and other disorders is consistent with the radiation exposure.
I think you're absolutely right.
4 to 5 years after the fact is when these things are starting to hit. So I'm hoping a radio program like this can find its way to these people who really don't have a clue what could be going on, not having dreamt of the idea of exposure to radiation like that.
I think the fact that over 400 of these people have cancers of one sort or another now is just, well, this just didn't happen by accident. Thanks so much.
Well, there was also evidence of an electromagnetic pulse at the time, and I wonder if Mr. Rodriguez knows anything about that.
Well, there was actually seismic data before the plane hit. That was something that was already proven by the government's own records. Was shown that, you know, there was a huge seismic earthquake-like underground movement. And it goes consistent with my talks about explosion before the building got hit by the plane. So, and about electromagnetic pulses and stuff like that, no, I don't.
All right, fine. Thanks so much, Mike.
Okay, thanks.
Let's go to Tom calling us from Ohio. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And this is Tom from Ohio. How are you doing tonight, Tom?
Oh, I'm doing real good. I First of all, I'm honored to be able to speak with Mr. Rodriguez. He went through one heck of a thing.
You have to speak right up. A little louder, please.
Yes, I'm very honored to speak to Mr. Rodriguez. Mr. Rodriguez, is the area where Ground Zero was, is it still hot?
By hot, you mean hot?
No. That area is already cleaned up. They have removed everything for quite some time. It's part of the whole rebuilding process of Lower Manhattan. That's, definitely cleaned up.
There really is no problem there. They've got everything out of there, and believe me, they got rid of the steel as quickly as they could, and of course, they shipped it off to Japan and China or something. Do they have the place where the rest of the material is? Is that under guard,
It is under guard, and it's on
Congress
17.
Why would they have it under guard? What were they protecting it?
Well, they call it as historical evidence, and they keep it as, protected hangar. It's hangar 17 at the New York Airport.
Mr. Rodriguez, was there a possibility that there was a magnetic pulse? Could it have come from, been generated from one of the airplanes? And also,
Tom, I don't think that he really has any information on that, and neither does anybody else. So, anything else you want to ask him?
Yes, one more question. I don't know if there's any documentation on it, but they say that some people, there is hearsay that some people say they saw a beam hit the top of the building that came straight down.
I don't think I've never heard that. Have you ever heard anything like that, William?
Well, some people came out and said, I think it was Morgan Reynolds, the former economist for the Bush administration, who all of a sudden becomes an expert on Star Wars weapon, and some lady saying that there was a possibility of some weapon from the sky, and which I don't believe and I don't support, and actually have people turned off by these even family members.
And Tom,
that is ridiculous.
I think it's ridiculous, Tom. I think they're you're listening to too much talk radio. There's so much disinformation out there, intentionally planted to get people so confused and to make people who are talking about what happened that day appear to be so radical. Oh, my goodness, a beam from outer space. That is the sort of thing.
No, I'm not making that up.
I'm saying that they're putting this information out there to confuse people. And do not become susceptible. They have so many different stories. There's a new one out. We've tracked it down. Definitely was the Mossad, or it was definitely the Pakistanis, or it was definitely the Saudis, or it was the Iranians.
Well, it was, there's nobody going to do anything about it. They're ignoring everything.
You're absolutely right.
I don't know why that. Mr. Rodriguez, why are the American people ignoring this?
All right, that's a good question. Why
that
do
is a great question.
Ignoring it, William?
Well, that's the question that we have been planting out there in the open. Why? And 5 years after, we still get no answers. So that's what we are in search for, the real truth and why this is happening.
Do you think that they're using some kind of a control on the American people that it just...
Well, American people are already controlled, that's for sure. I mean, everything that we get, we take, for example, CNN as the honest truth on everything that they put on TV. And this is incredible, because when I went to Europe, we were told by the European people, hey, listen, we have our own correspondents there giving totally different information than what we are seeing on your news, and we get both. So when, you get this kind of unbiased kind of coverage, which we don't, honestly don't believe that the coverage here is unbiased at all. We just get a filter news, and we get half-truths and manipulation, constant manipulation. And I tell you this as an experienced expert for several of the networks. I deal with the networks constantly. I have not stopped doing interviews from 9/11 till now. It's 5 years of experiences, and every week I'm doing interviews. So I have a better understanding. And I will tell you, yes, that what we get is not really the whole story. And remember, they also have to convey the message within a certain amount of minutes. So what you're going to get is actually the message that they want to convey. That's all, because they have a constraint of time. It's like, you know, right now we'll be able to talk for hours, but Mr. Montefa only has 2 hours to have this presentation, and I won't be able to cover all the events, all the details, and all the things. So you are even getting half of the information from me, not even half, just a piece of the information from me, and that's not enough for you to get an educated position. So you have to take it upon yourself and the American people in general to investigate and to do their own research. You know, the information is out there. They just have to go and don't take anybody's word for it, including mine. Just go and do your own research, and you will find out that what we are being fed is totally against of what really happened that day.
Mr. Rodriguez, I want to thank you for your service to this country. In my opinion, you are a real American hero. Thank you, sir. And thank you, Dr. Stan.
God bless you.
Hello?
Hello?
Am I on the air here?
Well, yes, you are. Go ahead.
This is Dr. Stan. We have Ron calling from Austin.
Oh, I didn't hear him coming in. Thank you so much, both of you. I really appreciate getting on here. I'm a physicist. That's my background. And I've done a little looking into, especially into this hydrogen bomb issue, and I can pretty much put it aside entirely. The state of the art, I don't have access to classified data, but the state of the art seems to be to have a pure hydrogen a fusion bomb is pretty much out of the range of possibility, because a lot of the initial stuff is just the ignition processes are being worked now in research, building laboratories to do that. I just don't believe that's going to be possible.
But, Ron, don't you think that there's an honest effort to get the American people so confused? And
right.
I don't even like to talk about why the Twin Towers came down. I just know we're not being told the truth. But
no, I don't.
They come up with all these various theories, all aimed at confusing us.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Stan, I did a lot of digging into standard demolition explosives, et cetera, and it's probably something like one of the high explosives. It's possible to do that. You got to have maybe, you know, 20, 30 tons in there. But if you spend 2 or 3 months gradually bringing in, you can do it. And regular demolition methods will create this pyroplastic flow. You don't have any nuclear stuff going.
And you know, thank you for being here and actually giving this information, because you have the credentials. The situation here is that you and you can actually attest to that. You don't need that amount, that much of an amount, if you plant them on the basement, like I
you got it
being told, because all you have to do is to take the core foundation and, you know, weaken it, and the building will come down.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, what I was thinking, Mr. Rodriguez, I've been writing this up just to get it clear in my mind. If they had all of this time to do it, they could have weakened it other ways. There are a lot of other ways of weakening the building gradually. You can be on the weekend, have cutting torches. You know, you can do a bunch of things over, say, a 3-4 month period, because that building was turned over to the new manager of the building in June, as I remember. And so they can go in there and do it. And thank you very much for acknowledging that I have some abilities in this area. I want to use them effectively, and that's why I'm giving a call, just to say, put aside that hydrogen bomb issue, because I want to put that aside. And that proposal that Judy Wood had, the professor...
Stupid, I believe is really, and I'm honestly, I say it directly, I think it's a stupid proposition. And
yeah, well, that's right, I can understand that, and thank you for going along with this. The reason I'm putting it in is to put my credibility in it, right, to be able to say, hey, I've looked at the thing. You know,
I appreciate that, Ron. Thank you so very much for calling. And anything else you wanted to say?
No, thanks so much. I'm honored to be on with Mr. Rodriguez.
God bless you.
I am the one honor. You know,
have a wonderful Christmas, Ron.
Thanks so much.
Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Our guest this evening is William Rodriguez, who was actually there. He was the last person to escape from the North Tower on that Tuesday morning, this terrible Tuesday morning. And, of course, the question we have to keep asking is, what happened to the 1,100 bodies? Not any fragment of this has ever been found. Were they crushed or were they vaporized? Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and I think that sometimes we may do a lot better simply asking questions, since we do not know the answers, and we can be, one thing is very, very sure, and that is that everything that the government finances is an effort to come up with an explanation. It doesn't have to be valid. They just got to, confuse the issue to the point where people can't think effectively, and then, of course, try to focus our attention on what's going on in the Middle East. So we will not ask who murdered all the people that morning. And people say, well, of course, it was Osama bin Laden. Well, if it's Osama bin Laden, if you go up on the FBI page and look for the 10 most wanted, you'll find Osama bin Laden is there, but they don't even mention the Twin Towers, and we actually have that. We'll send it to any of you who would like to see it. They talk about him in being involved with the bombing of the embassies over in Africa, but not one mention of the Twin Towers. So if Osama bin Laden did it, maybe we really ought to tell the FBI so they could go after him for that. But they don't mention that. He's one of the 10 most wanted men in the world. But they don't even mention the Twin Towers.
Let me add to that, Stan, that I spoke directly to the former FBI director of the Western region, Mr. Ted Gunderson. And on camera, Mr. Ted Gunderson is telling me directly that, how the government itself created Bin Laden, how he was the person in charge of putting the care package of $100 million in arms for the rebels, the Afghan rebels, and how the name of Bin Laden was coming out from military bases back and forth, and, the information was available during that time. It's incredible that this guy met with Bin Laden here in the United States in a hotel in Ventura Boulevard.
Is Ted Gunderson actually met with him there?
Yes.
Is that on your DVD?
It's going to be on the next DVD that we are producing.
All right, great. Mm-hmm. And, of course, so basically Mr. Gunderson, who I know and who I happen to believe is an honest man, actually says that he actually met with Osama bin Laden.
Osama bin Laden. He was the one in charge. Remember, Ted Gunderson was the person that had 300 FBI agents under his command and a person with $2 billion a year in budgetary discretion. He was the one that paid. He was the one that asked for the investigation to be approved. So, the guy has, again, credentials, something that, you cannot goes against. He's right there. And this is one of the top government officials as well.
Now, when did he actually meet with bin Laden? Was that in the early 80s?
In the late 80s.
In the late 80s, okay.
Yeah.
All right, fine. Well, our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you have a question or a comment on what we've been talking about. But I think it's so vitally important that people remember we must question what happened on that Tuesday morning. What happened to the 1,100 bodies? How those passports managed to survive? And then, the one thing that Chris convinced me more than anything else is building number 7. Do you have any thoughts on building 7 coming down at 5:20 in the afternoon?
Yeah, it's actually very incredible because that building was never hit by a plane, was never actually in the hit area, was across the street from the ground zero, it wasn't even part of the 16 acres, and collapsed by itself on its own foundation like a controlled demolition, and it didn't have a huge fire like everybody says. The building.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly we were just talking with William Rodriguez. Two things I just simply mentioned. I'd mentioned, of course, the incredible thing about the 1,100 bodies that disappeared. Passports that survived miraculously, there's no way that could have happened. Those were obviously planted by someone. The hijackers' passports, and then of course Building 7 coming down, and you were just starting to answer what your thoughts on Building 7 coming down. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, well, it came out in the afternoon. It was never hit by a plane, was never actually in the area that actually was Ground Zero. Ground Zero was 16 acres square, and was across the street, was never hit by huge amounts of debris like the Deutsche Bank, and the Deutsche Bank really received more of a hit, direct hit, and still standing. and it collapsed on its own foundation like a controlled demolition. And, you know, just remind me one thing. There is a movement right now in Germany within the actual shareholders of the insurance company that did the payout to Silverstein to do their own investigation, because actually they are very angry that they just like pay this guy just like that, and the shareholders, and you know, who took the decision. So they are trying to do their own investigation as well. So this is something that we will continue hearing about, and come out with other conclusions as well. Remember, the NIST, the National Institute of Safety and Technology, never came out with an answer about what happened to Building 7. Okay. And they were asked directly many times, and they say they didn't know. They had no answer. That would be part of the new report. And again, you know, this is the people that I also offer my testimony publicly. I have the actual video that will be placed on my website on 911keymaster.com. I will put the videos when I'm actually breaking into the press conferences of the NIST, and I ask them about, you know, why they haven't called me and the people that I made available, and that we have crucial information about the building and about the failures of the building itself. And they said that they were going to call, they were going to do it, they were going to do a follow-up, which it never happened.
In other words, you actually have this on videotape?
On video.
And, of course, they said they're going to call you, and they never do. So how could they possibly come up with a complete report any more than the 9/11 Commission could come up with a complete report if they totally ignore the people who were there,
correct,
who witnessed the explosion
and
of the buildings?
And again, this is an organization that, you know, think about it. They're receiving the funding, the $25 million, $27 million. They're getting it directly from the government. So they have to make their founders, supporters, look good, because they're not going to come out and criticize the people, you know, feeding their families. Think about it.
Well, of course, well, it's the old adage, you never want to bite the hand that feeds you. Let's go to Marilyn calling here from California. Hi, Marilyn. How are you doing?
Hi, Stan and Mr. Rodriguez. Good to hear you.
God bless.
I just want to make a statement. When I was watching these events on TV the morning of, there was a preliminary New York local station feed of a Asian man standing out on the sidewalk, and he made this comment. He says, my feet got hurt. There was some explosion from underneath, and boy, I wish I'd taped that because I remember that, and that was my first inkling that there was something really wrong going on. But other than that, you know, I didn't tape it. What do you think hit those towers, since there were no bodies ever found?
No, there were bodies found and identified, but only, you know, over 1,000 bodies. But, you know, whatever happened to the other bodies is our question.
Oh, were the bodies actually identified as passengers that were known to be on those planes?
You see, what they have, right now they have 13,650 body fragments that have not been identified, and their answer is that they don't have the DNA expertise right now. Their techniques have not developed so well to identify these body fragments, to say, you know, who they belong to. They don't even know if they all belong to one person or from different people. They have no idea. Actually, one of the things that we did, one of the movements that we did, is that they have to maintain that for future research, and they found a way to mummify them. So in the future, when they have the technology available, they can go back and identify those body fragments.
I think what Marilyn is asking is, were they able to identify any of the passengers on the plane among those body fragments? Do we know that? Or can
yes.
we trust them if no matter what they say?
Yes, they did identify. Well, that's what they say, but we don't know. You know, we don't know the expert on DNA.
So there we are, Marilyn. There's so many unanswered questions.
Those people could have come from anywhere, Stan.
Anyway, thanks very much for calling.
Thank you.
Good night. And our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, right here in the Central Coast of California. this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest is Mr. William Rodriguez. Our telephone number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And the question is, what really happened that Tuesday morning? And certainly there's so much to suggest that we have not gotten the complete story. And of course, we began to find out that there was a military exercise that morning. Now, both the Joint Select Intelligence Committee and the 9/11 Commission concealed the fact that there was a military exercise that morning that simulated the hijacking of a plane. Did you have a chance to look at that article in the Vanity Fair magazine, September?
Not only on the Vanity Fair, we have inside information. Remember, we have been at the forefront of the whole investigation, so we have been able to be privy of many of the things that didn't come out publicly. And it's really incredible that this information, once it was brought out by Vanity Fair, all of a sudden they tried to squash it. And one of the things that we have said from the very beginning, the families, is how the most important and powerful nation in the world, with the best supposedly internal defense system, failed on every level, federal, state, civil, the FAA, the FDA, everything failed. Every single department failed, one after the other. It was a total catastrophe, mayhem. And those planes were never intercepted at all. And on top of that, you know, we'll give the information, for example, the example of the golfer from Florida that went out on a plane 5 minutes away from what they call it, the flight path, and he was shot down, and that was in the 80s. So, you know, if they could have done that at that time, you know, very easily, these planes for more than an hour and a half could have been intercepted. And they didn't. And on top of that, why one of the directors of the tower, the control tower for NORAD, which is air defense, decided upon himself to erase more than an hour of communications between the planes and the tower control, because he said he didn't want the families to have the pain to listen to those recordings. You know, for us, that's obstruction of evidence, of justice, you know. He took it upon himself to erase that. Why? Why this guy was never prosecuted? Why this guy still on the job and receive a promotion? Why? 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 We never get answers to those questions.
No, and I don't think we ever will. Of course, the people that are most incompetent get either incompetent or perhaps treacherous. Got promoted. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and again our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and we have Aldo calling from Austin, Texas. Hi, Aldo. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are y'all?
Doing fine.
Hi, Aldo.
Willie, ¿cómo estás, man? I just wanted to give you a shout out. Mad props.
Thank you, buddy.
They're one Latino to the other, man. You're doing a great job, and keep it up, and we're rooting for you, man.
Gracias, hermano.
Spread that knowledge out, though, man, because that helps us Latinos show our kids. Show that we can all step up and do something. If you're doing it, porque, you know, die en los cajones y vamos a hacerlo. And, you know, spread that knowledge and that truth, man.
Thank you, buddy.
Okay,
thank you
fine. Do you have any questions at all, Aldo?
I did not. I just wanted to give Willie a big shout out.
All right. Thank you so much for calling. Really appreciate it.
No problem.
Bye-bye. And certainly I congratulate him, too, for having the courage to be involved. But you see,
I get attacked constantly by the people that don't want this information to be discovered. And, you know, it's funny because I just got invited. Another historical event was that this week I just got invited by the Ministry of Communications from Iran on a peace mission. Listen to this, on a peace mission with several rabbis and other kind of people that want, you know, go and do this peace approach and get attacked by everybody, like, you know, you should stay away from Iran, you gotta, you know, these people are gonna do this manipulation of your story. So listen, you know, we go anywhere in the world that wants to hear the truth. And this is, again, a peace mission where we are trying to outreach. The same thing that we do it there, we can do it in China, we can do it in Israel, we can do it in Lebanon, Afghanistan, anywhere. And this is not the first time that this happened. I mean,
Now, of course, are these rabbis who want to go and talk to the Iranians to try to stop this insane war that are...
We are invited by the Ministry of Communications over there.
Uh-huh.
And it's not that we took it upon ourselves, you know, to do the outreach. They heard me speaking in London in front of 22,000 people. And they say, you know, we would like, because I was talking about peace and about what happened and, you know, about false flag. And they say, we would like you to have that message in our country as well. And this is historical, but I get attacked by everybody saying, well, you know, that's treason going to do it. Hold on, you know, this is a peace mission. If it was Jimmy Carter or if it was Jesse Jackson going over there, everybody would be applauding.
Well, even more than that, of course, my concern is that I believe we're being manipulated intentionally and maliciously into a war with Iran. And who will benefit from a war with Iran? Will the American soldiers who die? Will the Iranian people? Will the leaders of Iran? I mean, after all, people have forgotten back in 1979 when the American CIA brought the radical Islamic leaders who are there today into power. And we installed the Ayatollah Khomeini. Everybody's forgotten that. But yeah, and of course, it's almost as if there's long-range planning on the part of Zbigniew Brzezinski, who, of course, was responsible back in 79, and he is still one of the leaders of this whole internationalist movement, who I fear really want a third world war. And I think I congratulate you for doing everything you can to try to avert that. A third world war would be the end, not only of countless millions of lives, but could very well mark the end of the United States of America as we know it. So I certainly congratulate you for being willing to go over. When do you think you'll be taking off? Do you have any idea?
Well, I was invited probably. They're putting this plan together for March, and I haven't said yes yet because I have a lot of tours that I have to do to bring the truth out through UK, through Denmark, and to Finland, for example. And but we don't have a date yet, but we have probably by March will be the invitation. So, you know.
Well, all I can say is you be very, very, very careful. We don't want you to, end up like our Russian friend over there.
No
question at all. He was poisoned. Everybody knows he was poisoned.
I could be poisoned here. I could be poisoned tomorrow. I could be attacked here as part of being an activist. And, you know, I'm alive because of a miracle. God gave me a second opportunity. God chose my path of life after 9/11. He made me. I didn't make myself. And I just fulfilling and glorifying that second opportunity, just searching for the truth and talking about peace. And I'm very involved with the peace movement all over the world. So, you know, whatever I can to glorify that second opportunity, I will do it.
Well, more power to you, and I really believe you're absolutely right. You probably should have died there, but God has something else in mind for you. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you'd like to talk to William Rodriguez, who is the last person to escape from the North Tower, and of course that's why he feels that God did spare his life, and he's been, of course, recruited into a very important message. And he's where did you actually speak? You were over there in Great Britain. You said you spoke to an audience of 22,000 Muslims. Where were they able to get an audience at?
The Excel Arena. That's a huge arena in they call it the Docklands in UK. And actually, it was the Global Peace and Unity Conference. Listen to this: Global Peace and Unity Conference. It was a peace conference. And it was actually presented live to millions through Islam TV. And I'm not Islamic. I was just representing the victims of 9/11. But I honestly was very nervous how the message was going to be received. And I was very, very surprised when these people opened their hearts and their love to receive this message. So it was really historical by itself.
I'm sure there was, and I certainly am glad that people are actually organizing these meetings around the world. This is the only way we're going to get the truth out, because we're not going to get it out through the standard media here in the United States, because, of course, they're controlled by the same people, I feel, were behind what happened on 911. And if there's nothing to conceal, then why did they conceal the testimony of 1,100 people who appeared before the 911 commission? Why, of course, have they got all of the information from this committee that supposedly investigated for 5 years why the Twin Towers came down? And then Professor Stephen Jones, wanted to see their information, and they told him he would have to sign a non-disclosure agreement. He could see everything, but it was classified, and he could never tell anybody what he saw. Why bother to see it if you can't tell anybody? And who are they concealing the truth from? Osama bin Laden.
Correct.
I mean, this is so incredible, and nobody ever asked the question, if there's nothing to conceal, why did the Bush administration immediately classify all the information on 911, and most of it is still classified today? In fact, they're very, very selective in what they've released. In fact, they certainly have released three videos of what happened to the Pentagon, and none of
it wasn't even
videos,
it was frames, seven frames, that's nothing.
And so, I mean, I think you
have the experts out there, but I think for every second it takes 29 frames. So imagine when they show 7 frames only, that even, it's not even a wink.
And so basically they're obviously, they're very selectively releasing things that don't show anything, and they say, see, we let you see the videos. Oh, shucks, there's no plane there, but trust us, a plane hit the Pentagon. I don't know what hit the Pentagon, but I know they haven't told us the truth. Steve from southern Indiana. Hi, Steve. How are you doing?
Okay, Stan. How are you?
Doing just great.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, Mr. Rodriguez. I would just like to say I thank you for being a true American hero, and the only question I have for you is, do you have any recommendations to what us citizens can do to support you in your efforts to get the truth out?
Yes, definitely. There's many activism. We need volunteers. They can go to my website, 911keymaster.com, and support the research. We have been accused, the American people, by countries that I have visited, of being couch potatoes activists, because we just always complain, but while we are sitting in front of the TV, and we don't do any activism out there. It's funny because ABC came out with an article last week where he says that even though the majority of the country questions that the government officials are about 9/11 and have actually doubted the president's position on it, it's a sad situation when nobody does anything about it, because we have millions and millions and millions of people that totally doubts the official story, but they don't do anything about it. So we need to do an inquiry. We are actually going to an international inquiry now to actually get to the truth of what happened. And we have been lied so many levels. For example, I was doing the PSA, the public service announcement commercials for that went national, asking for the impeachment so we can get to the truth. And we were told that they were going to go for it. And then, the Democrats win, and the first thing Nancy Pelosi does, goes on national TV the same day and said that the impeachment is out of the table. So when you get manipulated by both sides of the government, you don't even know what to do but become more active and open your mouth and, support these kind of rallies and support these kind of legislations to get to the truth. And the best way is just to be involved, not to take a stance that somebody else will do it. And if you cannot do it, then support the people that is doing it. That's what I said on my website. If you cannot do it yourself, support at least your activist that is actually doing the change.
And I think the most important thing right now would be to demand that the Democrats set up an independent congressional investigation, and that they do not let the Bush administration have anybody there on that committee, and no Republicans on it who are answerable to the president, do an independent investigation with subpoena power and start calling all these people that the 911 commission refused to call, or if they did call, that they sealed their testimony. And then, of course, the other thing is the Democrats could demand that the testimony before the 911 commission be taken out of those archives and made public, made available. They could do it. They have the power to do it, and they ought to use that power. And correct. So we should simply let them know if you really are any different at all than the Republicans, why, let's see you have the courage to set up an independent investigation with subpoena power with somebody that we can really trust. And I'd like to see Ron Paul and a couple of his friends on there, Republicans, who I think don't go along with what the administration says. They want to get to the bottom of what happened. If we're going to save America, we're going to have a truly independent investigation. Did you say they're having one over in Europe of some sort with him?
Well, I went to Japan, and I spoke in front of the Japanese Diet, which is our version of Congress, and they say that they were going to start an inquiry because the victims deserve the truth. I went to Venezuela, and you know in Venezuela the National Assembly came out with a resolution about investigating 911 as well. All these countries, remember, under international law, when a country, meaning United States, fails to do a thorough investigation about the death of their nationals, that country itself have the jurisdiction to create their own inquiry. And that's exactly what we're going about, because if we don't get it here, then we got to do it on the International Crimes Court.
Steve, did you have any other question before we let you go? Steve, are you still there? I guess we lost Steve, and so let's. Our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. We've got time for one or two more calls. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And you know, as you stop and contemplate what happened, almost 3,000 Americans were killed that morning. Now, you would think that the administration would do everything they can to bring out all the facts instead of simply making all the information dealing with what happened that morning classified so it would not be available. Because, of course, if they're trying to keep it secret, everybody's going to be suspicious they've got something to conceal. So why won't they allow people to come forward? Why won't they allow government employees to come forward and speak out? Well, I think most government employees are really afraid to speak out. Do you have that impression, William, that a
yes,
lot of government people know what's going on?
A lot of people already within the government are willing to talk. But, you know, we need to, and I was told by somebody in the intelligence community that, you know, there's people willing to talk, but they need assurances that they're going to be protected. Sadly, I don't have the money. I don't have the funds. I don't have a whistleblower's program that I can award to every whistleblower, at least coverage for their retirement. These are people that are still working in the government. There are people that are afraid of losing, because of the legislation that they have for whistleblowers, you can lose all your benefits. So, you know, how you are going to get these people in a comfortable way to say, yes, you know, let me talk to everybody and tell them what I know when, you know, we have not set up the ground foundation for these people to come forward and point the fingers to where the problems are. And this is not only with 9/11, with anything that is government corruption.
And in fact, even under the Clinton administration, you had some protection as a whistleblower. Under the Bush administration, they've taken away all of the protection of the whistleblowers, which means if you come forward, you lose your job, you lose your health insurance, you lose your retirement. All the years you've invested preparing for the future, you will become destitute, and who knows, you might even lose your life. Well, let's go to John calling from Springfield, Illinois. Hi, John. How are you doing?
Good. I got a couple questions for him on immigration. Mexico. I think Mexico is getting a bad rap.
Wait a minute. We're not talking. I think. Are you listening to our program? We're talking about 911.
911. We're talking about through Mexico and stuff. I had a different comment. I didn't know if that was all right or not.
No, I think we ought to stick to this. What happened on 911. I appreciate your calling. We'll probably be doing a program on immigration next.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks very much. But I think we ought to stay. I don't want to get too far off the field, but you've actually had people from the intelligence say they would come forward, but they'd have to have protection.
Right.
And so I really believe that this is true. I really believe there are lots of people out there. In fact, certainly Jimmy Walter, who I know you know very well, They actually threatened him. They actually.
He left the United States. He's not coming back to the United States because he was attacked.
Was he attacked physically? I know they put a big boulder on the top of his car. They kept threatening him and telling him they're going to kill him. And he was getting these threatening telephone calls.
Correct. And the government refused to investigate when he complains directly to the government.
Well, I wonder why they didn't want to investigate those threats against a very courageous and very very wealthy individual who had actually run full-page ads in the New York Times and Sydney advertisements on New York television, trying to get people to realize that there's no way those buildings could have come down at the speed of gravity. There was no way they could have come down at the speed of gravity unless there were explosives in the buildings. Buildings do not fall the way that you saw them. And after all, nobody's ever commented what happened to the tops of the building. Watch those buildings come down. The tops of the buildings sort of disappear in the smoke, almost as if they're not there. Well, we'll ask Bill about that in just when we get back. William, one of the things we're just about done here, and I'm going to let you go, but we got three more minutes. One of the things is I've watched those buildings come down, and you see the building collapsing. But it's almost like whatever happened to the tops of the buildings.
Whatever happened, exactly.
It's almost like they disappeared or vaporized.
They vaporized.
As the lower parts of the building were collapsing.
They vaporized. They're not, I mean, think about it. It turned into dust. The whole building turned into dust. I mean, proof of that is that, remember, I was right in front of the revolving doors. The building collapsed right on top of me. So I would have been squashed to death, and I'm still here telling my story. So, you know, that tells you a lot.
Well, I think that the great tragedy is, of course, that almost 3,000 Americans died, and nobody has been held responsible for it. The president promised the American people he would get Osama bin Laden dead or alive, and he never tried to get Osama bin Laden. They wouldn't even let our special forces troops go in and after him. They hired Afghan mercenaries who supported Osama bin Laden to catch Osama bin Laden, and you never guess what happened. He got away.
Correct.
And then they never went after him. Instead of going after him and stopping, you know, this Al-Qaeda movement, if it's really a terrorist movement, we should have stopped it and captured the leaders. Instead of that, we went to war in Iraq. Well, anyway, do you have a parting thought for our listeners, William? We're just about out of time.
I just want to say thank you to everybody, and especially to you, for having me on the show again for the second time. It's been an honor, a pleasure, and a privilege, and I always welcome you. Whenever I get here in the United States, it's just a mandatory step to be with you and give the information of what's going on. And again, you know, for people to get more information and to understand what happened, they can go to my website, 911-911, the numbers, keymaster.com, 911keymaster.com, and get some of the information and do your own research. Don't take our words for it.
That's 911keymaster.com, 911keymaster.com. And, well, we've had you on, Sydney Oliver. We actually do three separate audiences every day. And so I've already had you on two of them. When you get back, when would you be leaving, do you think, for the next trip?
I'm leaving to Texas next week, and then I'm going to Puerto Rico. The television over there is doing a television special about my life, and from there we'll go back to England for a whole month of presentations. So I will be back probably March.
All right, fine. Well, we'll talk to you in March, and hopefully there'll be some new good information at that time, some good information. Hopefully the American people will begin to wake up. God bless you. Good night.
God bless
Thanks
you.
So much.
Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I think Mr. William Rodriguez is a very, very brave individual. We hope to put his story into a four-tape set and maybe put in the Laura Chavez's story along with that. Laura, of course, has made the mistake of writing a letter to the editor and telling what happened that morning, and of course, he immediately started receiving threats, lost his job, and now, of course, he won't speak to anybody. He lives in perpetual fear. He's unable to flee the country, as of course, Jimmy Walter did. Jimmy Walter's a multimillionaire, But, of course, he was forced to leave the country. As you know, Mike Rupert had left the country because, of course, he was threatened and his office was broken into. And the FBI had infiltrated his staff and one of his best friends. He learned was an FBI informant. And then, of course, they disrupted his finances. He moved down to Venezuela. And then he became deathly ill. Michael Rupert, of course, his kidneys, his adrenal glands failed, his liver failed. About 3 weeks ago, he was up in Canada being treated for what may very well be a fatal illness. How did it come about? Why, Michael Rupert tried to bring out the truth about what happened on 9-1-1. He was the first person to talk about the military exercises that were held that morning. At least one of them simulated the hijacking of an airplane, by the terrorists. What do you think the chances are that that could have happened simply by accident? Statistically, 1 in 1,000,000, 1 in 1,000,000,000, 1 in 1,000,000,000,000, 1 in 250,000,000,000. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've got real problems in America. We have a number of DVDs on the subject. We even have a special on those DVDs. We have 9-1-1 Press for the Truth. We have 9-1-1 Mysteries. We have Terror Storm, Alex Jones' excellent video. We have the In Plain Sight of Damon Kleist. And then lastly, we have The Day That Changed America Forever. All those 5 videos are available, and you can ask for the 9-1-1 special, and you'll get a special price on it. If you want to substitute one of the 4 tape sets that we produced for one of the videos, if you already have it, you certainly can. But if you watch these videos, all 5 of them together, you'll know what happened that morning. And you'll know, of course, that we have not been told the truth. And 3,000 Americans were murdered. But why should we be surprised? We are dealing with organized evil that is intent upon plunging us into World War III. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. You need, of course, to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, to understand who is coordinating all of these covert organizations. That's 1-800-544-8927. I do want to mention that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. We hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. If you'd like, of course, to get some of our other videos, if you have not yet seen, They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version, it is one of the most gripping experiences you'll ever have. You need to see to understand how the secret societies have worked here since the beginning of America. You need to see the video, the award-winning video, I might add. I think 1,000 entries for the film festival, and this got the best documentary. The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. And then, of course, if you'd like to get the DVDs, Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2, and then, of course, the Pastor Joe Schimmel's latest presentation, The Da Vinci Con. It is one of the most fascinating analyses of what's going on in Hollywood and the Gnostic influence on what's going on. And until you understand Gnosticism, you can't understand Masonry or the Skull and Bones or the Bohemian Grove or any of the secret societies. The Da Vinci Con by Pastor Joe Schimmel. So please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and for our protection. Our number again, 1-800-544-8927. And so until tomorrow evening at the same time, may the Lord be with you.
Tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.